Blog Talk Radio.
Pleasure. I am so happy to be here with the handsome and debonair Bennett Pomerantz. I have been pretty much MIA for like a year, and I've already put out about 5 or 6 books this year. I am a published author. I do a lot of self-publishing at the moment, but starting February 2015, I have my first series coming out with Crushing Hearts and Black Butterfly Publishing. I am very excited about that. I love my One House United. They are going to love that. I've just been doing so much writing. I just put out a book this past Thursday evening. It went live.
And by the way, it's a very good book. I will say this. It is a very good book.
Oh,
I did
thank
get
you.
I did get it. I'm sorry. I got a chance to skim it. I'm sorry. I only had 16 things in front of me.
Yeah, First Encounter, a lady series, book one. It is actually my first romance book ever. So, and it doesn't have any creepies in it, nothing. It's just, there's no sex. It's very, very clean. So a lot of people are like, oh, man, don't worry. I'll be writing other books that will have, you know, that
I still like
in
Z
it.
Radio that you did, okay? I'm picky. I like Z Radio. One day you'll re-release that.
Speaking of Z-Radio, seeing as how I don't think that you even got back to me, Bennett, I am reworking it, and I would love for you to write the foreword to it as soon as it's reworked.
Oh, well, okay. I didn't arrange this, but yes, I will do this. I will do this. I've already got it in note form.
Good, because it's going to be different. I'm going to do it from like a first-person point of view. Because a friend of mine said that he loved that movie Warm Bodies from the first-person point of view. So it's nothing like Warm Bodies whatsoever. I mean, there's still going to be blood, guts. I mean, it's still going to be disgusting. And the cover is, wow.
I cannot wait. And you'll put my name on the cover somewhere, like Rachel's and everything else. Let me get to
yes,
the
I
other
will.
Panelists. Not that I don't love you. I love you and all the rest of them, too. I want to get to Alyssa Day. Hello, Alyssa.
Hi, Bennett. How have
How
you
are
been?
You? I'm working too
good.
Hard. What's your excuse?
I'm writing too much. I just
And what are we working on?
Well, I just finished the Destin series, and I know you read one or two of those books, so the third book
I read
is
one. I didn't read two. I read one. Just I'm sorry. There's two. There's one of me, and I'm going to quote Regis. I'm only one man.
No, I totally understand. The third book in Chains came out August 1st, so it's doing pretty well, and I have about 3 more books that are scheduled to come out this year. And one of those is an urban fantasy. It's The Darker Side of Alyssa Day, so can't wait to see what people think about that one. And then I have the Press Legacy series that's coming out, too, and I've got two books done with that so far. And that actually is a spicier side of the romance side, but it's also paranormal as well, too, because, you know, I can't stay away from putting paranormal into my books for some reason. So
that scares me. You and K.B. Miller, I mean, yeah, you guys can't get away from paranormal. You try, but you can't.
You know, once you go there, you just don't go back.
Yeah, once you go black, you can't go back. Okay. Sharon, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Well, why don't you say hello?
Well,
tell us about your new book and everything else, because I'm getting to Miss Dane last for a reason. She's only got like 250, 300 books, and
Oh, really?
I love her, but you know, I want to make sure, because I also want to talk about The Edge in a minute. Then
okay.
We'll start on my side. So Sharon, tell them about your book and tell them all, because I read it. It's a very interesting book.
Okay, thank you. Well, yeah, my book is Jokers and Dandies. And it's about growing up here in Alabama. I was born in Mississippi, in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and I moved to Alabama when I was 4. But this is each chapter is a short story, and it's basically all the things that that when you get to have a family reunion and people start picking on you and remember when you did this, and everyone laughs, and it's always the stupid stuff always happened to me anyways. So I thought, well, you know, I hear about it every time everyone gets together, so let's just write a book. So that's what I did, and so I had to change names of everybody, but and the family, you know, so they wouldn't kill me. But yeah, we did.
Has anybody in the family gone up to you and said, "That's me, isn't it?"
Yeah, they know. Yeah, and it's, you know, I tried to keep them anonymous, but you know, I'm in a small town, and you know, I can change names all I want, but people are still going to know who is who in the family. So, but it's been fun. It's been a lot of fun, and, you know, people have gotten a lot of laughs out of it. So, I mean, that's what I intended to do.
Well, yeah, I think it's an adorable little – it reminds me a lot of Fanny Flagg and some of her Fried Green Tomatoes at the Whistle Stop.
Right.
I'm dating myself now. Oh, God. That's 20 years old. Okay.
Right.
Let me introduce this last lady, because if not, I'll get letters from Marcia. Cassandra Dane, I love you. How many books do you have written now? 250, 300? What are we?
Oh, I don't know. It's something over 200, but I've lost count.
She's lost count. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, well, that happens when you write as fast as I do. But, yes, I'm Cassandra Dane, and I write a little bit everything from BDSM, DDDS, male, paranormal, vampires, serial killers, thrillers, dramas, poetry, you name it, I write it. I love it, and I've been writing for all my life, but published about 3 years now. I also do a fabulous show called
I'm not
The
trying
Edge.
To be rude. It's been 4.
Well, maybe it has been 4. I don't know. Has it been 4?
It has been 4. Yes, I'm the guilty party. I know. I've kept track.
Listen to you. I think it was 4 as of September 1 is the
September
first one.
September 1, yes. September 1, and it was brown wrapper. The first one. I didn't pan it, but I didn't not pan
wrapper.
It. Yes, I know. I'm the guilty one. Now, I also want to mention, because Cassandra Dane does a show on this network, not on my network, but on the World of Ink network, and she has a show tomorrow called The Edge. So take me to The Edge. Who do we have tomorrow before I forget? We'll get it again, but I want to make sure they know about the show tomorrow, what time, and how they can come on and visit and whatever.
Yeah, for folks who don't know me, I do The Edge, and it's where I take authors, all kinds of artists who take their work to the very edge, whether it's avant-garde or edgy serial killers, whatever it is, I like to bring it out of them. Tomorrow, it's at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and it's Margie Church, who has a couple of new books out, including a pretty hot male-to-male piece that I can't wait to delve into with her.
And when I have done this show, I've been in her hot seat. It is hot. It really is. And I don't mean sexually hot. I mean hot. She can probe me, and she gets the answer she really wants to hear, and she really is a smart interviewer. Okay.
Thank you.
And I'll take the 20 like you promised.
Smart.
And Marcia in Virginia won't kill me, okay? Now, let me ask all of you this, because we just lost Robin Williams. And I want to ask, I mean, everybody, this has been the Robin Williams Network on everything and anything, and it's been, you know, we've been bombarded with coverage. But what's your favorite Robin Williams? I don't care if it's Alive at the Met, or if it's Mork and Mindy, or if it's Dead Poets Society or Goodwill Hunting. What's your favorite Robin Williams piece or pieces that you like?
I was Mork and Mindy for me. This is Sharon.
I actually like Patch Adams.
Ooh. Ooh, I love Patch Adams, yeah. And
well, I'm
going to
give one that is a little telling, which, and I'm going to say the name wrong, but it's which Whatever This Way Comes, which is unfortunately the piece where he goes over to the other side.
Oh, What Dreams May Come? I love that one, too.
Yeah. Love that movie. That was very telling and very poignant.
Yeah, I'm not saying how he died, nor am I trying to be rude and say he did this or however. I just, to me, and I'm going to, because I know I have, I'm a fan of Good Morning, Vietnam!
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Love that movie.
So, Candy, what's yours?
You know, I was just thinking about this, and it's funny that you bring it up, because a friend of mine on Facebook posted one of his early comedy sketches, and he was talking about the difference between dogs and cats. And the way he did it was, you know, we all know he was very animated, and he was talking about, you know, the kitty, you know, basically, you know, we need to do things for cats because that's just what they expect, and the dogs are just happy to see, and the cat's all, where's my food? The way he did it, I was laughing so hard. I just thought it was, to me, that is the true Robin Williams. You know, he just opens up his soul in his comedy, his early stuff. And Good Morning Vietnam, I love that. That was like my first favorite movie with him.
I loved his concert. I loved his Weapons of Mass Destruction, where, I mean, where he was basically doing the riff on the Christ and on Moses and the children of Israel. And, you know, it's like, okay, Mr. David Copperfield, what do we do? We opened up the Red Sea. That was good. We go through. Okay, we're going on now here to Miami and going to screw up an election in Florida, you know. But still, his humor was so quick. It was like, if you have to listen to it 6 or 7 times to get some of the jokes, because he is that quick.
Yes.
That we have lost a true genius. I mean, there are geniuses as well. Mel Brooks, Jerry Lewis, Carl Reiner are geniuses as well. But Robin was, oh, God, he was rapid fire and things like that. I don't want to dwell on badness or whatever. I'm not worried about that. And I'm hoping tomorrow I hear Billy Crystal and he'll make me laugh, hopefully. He won't be so serious. He'll make light of Robin in the way he should be made of, you know, instead of making death sound so morbid, you know. I mean, you can't sing anything that Robin sings clean. So, let me ask a very simple question, because I have had this question. I've done this question enough times. And if you could invite 5 people, alive or dead, around the table for a meal, lunch, dinner, I don't care, who would it be and why?
Oh, my goodness. That is That is great. You know what? I'll go first. I would say five people I would invite to a meal. Okay, the very first one would be Princess Diana. The second one is Mother Teresa. I would have to, I would throw, the Dalai Lama in there as well. And the other two would be family members that have passed away, my grandmother and my mother. And the reason being is I would want to swap stories. It sounds very strange and odd, but I have always admired each one of these people that have made an impression upon me. And each one, I believe, in my heart, has contributed, you know, to not only to the well-being of the planet, but to those around them, you know, and two of them directly towards me. So that would be my choice.
Okay. Alyssa, would you like to tell me? Who's yours?
Mine's not as prolific as hers, but actually, I've made quite a few connections.
There is no
lately.
Wrong answer. You know that. There
exactly,
is no wrong
exactly.
answer here.
I would love to see my grandmother again, but, you know, I also believe in life after death, so I think she's around me all the time anyway. So I would actually like to meet some people that I haven't had a chance to meet before. I have some ladies that are on my street team, so I'm giving them a shout-out because they've been doing an amazing job trying to get my name out there for me. But they live in so many different places. Like I have some in the UK. I have some in Kansas. I have them all over the place. So I would just extend my table to just include all of these people because they keep me going. They keep me excited about my writing. They love the work that I'm doing, and I would love to meet them, actually. And
who would you like to have dinner, lunch, breakfast, whatever?
Well, mine are kind of avant-garde, as you could probably well imagine, given me. And since I'm definitely not religious, I would say King Arthur, because that's my favorite period of time. I would say Oprah, because I think she's an amazing lady. I would say Stephen King, because he's a fruitcake, and I just really want to explore that dark-sided mind, because I think a lot like him. I would say Rachmaninoff, because he is perhaps my favorite musician. And I would say Jon Bon Jovi, just because he's hot.
Sharon, who's yours?
Mine would be.
And wait, let me say this. Dale, I will answer the question. Yes, I know. I've gotten the Yahoo message. I will answer it, I promise. Go ahead, Sharon.
Okay. Steve Martin, Weird Al, Janis Joplin, Henry VIII, and I've got one more left. I'm just going to say my grandmother, because I've not seen her in a while. She's passed away, mainly because I want to laugh. And, you know, with Henry VIII, I just want to know what the heck was his deal. You know, I've always felt, you know,
You just make sure he doesn't marry you.
Well, yeah, or cut my head off or anything like that. I just want to, you know, kind of pick his brain a little bit and just say what the heck he was thinking, you know. So, you know, and then, of course, Janis Joplin. I just think she's cool. I think she'd be just someone neat to talk to.
Mine are, and yes, Dale, I'm answering your question, I promise. I love when you get Yahoo messengers and they ask, why don't you answer this one too, Ben? Harry Chapin, yes, he's the one that wrote Taxi and Dance Band on the Titanic and all this. George Carlin, the 1980s version of Carlin is wonderful. Jerry Lewis, the 1970s or 80s version of Jerry Lewis. Ray Bradbury, the Martian Chronicler himself. Oh, God, I would love that. And my father. I would love to have my dad and just sit there. And if my dad couldn't come for some reason, he usually always misses lunch and dinner invitations, I'd take Kevin Smith, who did Dogma and Jay and Silent Bob and other things. It would be a night I would not forget very quickly. We'd be laughing too much. Okay, so I want
to
make sure, because people
say one
are
thing.
Asking. I'm sorry?
Hey, Bennett.
Yes.
I have two questions. Can I come
yes.
to all your dinners? And the other question
anytime,
is...
Anytime, sweetheart. I usually, when I throw a party, I want more the merrier. You're at one of my parties now.
I also want to know which John Bon Jovi, the long hair or the short hair?
Oh, does it really matter?
I guess not.
Well, let me ask you, because we are all authors. We all have books. I know I have a book coming out in December myself. So what format do you like reading your own books that you buy in? Sharon, why don't we start with you?
I like the paper. I mean, the Kindle, the e-format is handy, but I still like to read a book and turn the pages, and I like smelling old books, so if it's old, I like to, you know, take a whiff or two. But, yeah, I like the paper books.
Miss Dane?
Well, I don't have a lot of time to read, as you can well imagine, but I have to agree. You got to read a book in your hand. You can't curl up to a Kindle underneath your covers. It just ain't sexy.
That's right.
Anybody else want to chime in?
I've really gotten into the Kindles, you know, because I don't have a whole lot of time to read besides during the daytime. You know, I'm one of these people, I work from home, so that's pretty much the only time I have, you know, is when in between answering phone calls and dealing with customers, I can read online.
I do have a Kindle, but I miss the paperback, and I'm really scared that our kids aren't going to even know how to open up books in the future. They're going to have absolutely no idea where reading started and everything we learned. It's kind of sad because there's something about being able to just curl up and to turn the pages, and you feel like you actually get more read when you read a book in your hand as opposed to an e-book copy. It's definitely going to be like an old art form.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
True.
Very
well,
true.
Well, let me ask you, do you think we'll ever not have paper books?
I think we're heading that way. I really do.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, we're not going to have public libraries anymore. We're just going to have the internet. I mean, it's going to be crazy.
Well, it may be
like
records and stuff now, or CDs. There's not that many available. It may be limited.
You don't want to look at my collection. I have CDs and DVDs. I have shelves of them. I ain't
right.
Getting rid of mine to love the money.
No. Well, no, like at the stores, though. Like if you go, you know, to whatever to buy the new ones, you know, they're hard to find.
Yeah, and I had a sad little thing yesterday. I have a 21-year-old assistant/receptionist who we're talking music, and she looks at me and she goes, "What are those DV things called that look like this?" And she's in her hands doing about 12-inch circle. And I'm like, "You mean a record? Is that what they're called?" Oh, dear God, I feel freaking old.
No kidding.
No, my ancient was this many years ago. Garth Brooks did a special for HBO, and he sang a song called American Pie. And he says, "Ladies and gentlemen, Don McLean," who, of course, wrote American Pie.
Right.
And lo and behold, I had one of the people in my office at that time says, "Wow, Garth gave this guy, this songwriter guy, Don McLean, a break." I'm like, I'm feeling my age right there. It's like, yes, in 1971, I remember American Pie. I mean, I grew up on it.
Mm-hmm.
That's like somebody telling me Meatloaf is a new artist, you know? I suddenly, it's like Don McLean giving him a break. Now, I can respect that Garth called him up and everything like that, but still, it's Don McLean, folks. I mean, you know, and to me, it's like, have you ever had a weird experience like that? You know, it's like where you feel your age.
Oh, yeah.
Care to share?
Well, there are a lot of them. I mean, if you ask anybody about certain things, like try asking about an 8-track tape. Oh, yeah. That brings back some fond memories of the Village People back in the day. But right now, they blink at you if they're about 30 or under. What the hell is that? Well, let me explain it to you.
I like to ask people to rewind their DVDs just because it's funny.
I got scared once. My nephew tells me, he says, Uncle Bennett, I heard this new band. I said, great. Tell me about it. He says, they had songs like Christine, 16, and Firehouse, and Strutter, and a song called Beth. And I'm like, Kiss? And he says, you know about this band? I said, yeah, I know about this band. How do you know about this? It's a neat band. And this is a couple of years ago. He was like 14 at the time. He's now 19. But I had the Kiss Deckology had a concert that was the center where it happened has been torn down since then. But they had this concert, DVD concert in Cap Center where Kiss was, and we're watching the same concert, and I'm watching it through his eyes, and I remember I was at that concert, and here he's watching the same concert years later, and he's like, this is neat, is it new? Yeah, it's new, right, okay, I'm getting old. So have you, anybody else had an experience like this, or am I the only one?
No, we've had an experience with a lot of new old songs with our kids.
Yeah.
Both my husband and I were over 40, and they're like, oh, man, this really cool band has this song out. And my husband's like, do you realize that song came out? And he can pick the year and who sang it. And they're like, no, they're always into arguing, no, it's a new song. And my husband said, no, actually, even the person who sang it in the 70s and 80s took it from someone else who sang it in, like, the 40s or 50s. And so, yeah, our kids are always arguing with us about music and, you know, so-called new songs. No, it's just a different voice.
Well, they're just recycling all the old songs now, because I think I heard Lionel Richie dancing on the ceiling in one of the hip-hop songs, and I was like, what? And then Michael Jackson, they're always taking his, too. But, yeah, stuff that happened a long time ago, you're hearing it in our music, and it's like, can't you make something up all by yourself? Do you need to recycle other people's stuff, or can you be creative on your own?
Well, that's like movies now. I mean, a lot of the movies are just remakes of ones we had seen, and probably older at that too.
Yes,
like the Karate Kid coming back, and you know, it's not near as good.
Well,
now.
They did the Running Man.
Oh, come on, Teenage Mutant Ninja
exactly.
Turtles.
I know, not even worth it. I looked at the preview, and I love the original Turtles. I'm like, there's no way we're seeing this.
Mm-hmm.
If my children are going to watch it, they're going to watch the originals because it's too violent now. I mean, yes, there was violence before, but now it's like people are dying. Like before, they'd be like crawling away, you know. But, I mean, that's with everything. That's with G.I. Joe. That's the Transformers. Like everything, all the concepts and morals that were taught in the cartoons when we were kids, totally missing from the cartoons these days. It really frustrates me.
Well, look at the Hercules. They did the Disney, did Steve Reeves, and now The Rock, of course, is now doing Hercules. And Steven Spielberg has his eye on doing West Side Story, more true to life.
Really?
Oh, but Spielberg directing it. So we're not talking just John Doe off the street.
Right.
You know, and they're also going to do another Batman reboot again.
Why?
And we're not talking the Ben
right.
Affleck thing. We're talking another, you know, a young Batman coming up. And, by the way, did anybody see the movie Guardians of the Galaxy? The new movie, supposedly?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, if you stayed until the last minute at the end, Howard the Duck. Yes, the one from the 80s has a small cameo, and they're talking about making a Howard the Duck movie.
Oh, my. Why?
Exactly.
So that brings me to my question. What TV show or movie should not be remade, other than all of them?
All of them.
Yeah. Pretty much everything from the 70s and 80s, I think.
I mean, if they have a good idea, sometimes, like the Blacklist, I like that show with James Spader. It's an interesting show. It's part Godfather. It's part other things. It's fine. But, I mean, half the things that are running on television these days, you've seen it 16 other times all mm-hmm. over television and movies and everything else, and it's starting to get on my nerves.
Yep.
Yeah, if they make one more cop show rip from the headlines, I'm going to vomit.
There were so many good authors
like
out there.
We need a hole in our head. Get some imagination, folks.
Yep.
Yeah, there's so many wonderful authors out there. Why don't you take some of these newer books and make movies
yep.
out of them?
Exactly.
But even the supposed new shows, they have a show called A to Z, Guy you know, or If I Stay is like, I'm trying to think of the other film they just had recently. If I Stay was a book, but they had another one that they, The Promise, The Vow, I'm trying to think of the other ones that they, they're all in similar vein to it. Forever, Endless Love, but they remade Endless Love. It's like, please, dear Lord, let them stop before they hurt themselves.
No kidding.
And what are they on? The Spider-Man Revisited. You've got another Spider-Man movie coming up. Now, thank God they're doing Iron Man. That's fine. But, you know, give me something new, you know.
Right.
Well, you've got 50 Shades of Nothing coming out, so there's something for you.
Yeah, let's not talk about that one and say we did. No. 50 Shades of Nothing, fine, but 50 Shades of Nothing has been done before, too. The Magus and Tropic of Cancer and other things. You know, and I hate to say it, and one of our mutual friends, Ms. Dane, Elizabeth Black, wrote a better book called Don't Call Me Baby, but I'm prejudiced.
Well, there are a lot of better books out there that are either erotic or not and could have been made into some incredible movies even without the, you know, sexual adaptations. But, you know, they're just running out of imagination, I'm telling you.
They're also, you know, it's like, oh, well, that film did successfully at the box office. Let's go see if we can make one just like it.
Yeah.
You know, they make two or three of the same kind of movie, basically, you know. Hercules mm-hmm. succeeds or Conan succeeds, we do another one. Or they make a cheap one in Yugoslavia, let's make another let's make Red Sonja, let's make whatever, you know. It's like, please, don't, just shoot them, you know. If you get something original, it ends up on the scrap heap because it didn't do great box office.
Right.
Or they put a number behind it, X-Men whatever, Expendables whatever, this one whatever, you know. The best sequel was Godfather Part 2, and it was totally different from Godfather Part 1 in a lot of ways. And it was fascinating character study. And even though it had the Part 2 to it, it made more sense as a film than it did, you know, than anything else. It was amazing. It was a prequel and it was a sequel all in one, and it worked. It was so well done. But you don't, Hollywood has lost that edge, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you guys a question then. Let me jump in here, because have any of you had an opportunity to talk to some independent filmmakers about any of your books?
No. I
have.
Yeah.
And it's been a fascinating ride to kind of go down that marketplace to see what might be selling and what they're looking for. And what I can tell you is that the nice thing with the independents, of course, they're trying to make a name, but they're trying to do it with something that is completely out there and avant-garde. You know, I have a film company looking at what is a male-to-male vampire serial killer BDSM club piece. Try to put that all in a movie.
Wow.
You mean Interview with a Vampire American Psycho, right?
Something to that effect. But if
and
you think
if I,
that way,
and,
that's...
And was it Up and Down or whatever, the one where they go into the tomb and they're seeing, you know, sometimes they come back where they see the car that they're burnt to death or things like that. Yeah, they're going into the catacomb or whatever, and the new movie that's coming out. Oh my God! I mean, that I've seen that how many times in horror movies?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think like anything else, they take a genre and they do it to death. You know, from the slasher flicks to the, you know, let's take the vampires and make them not frightening anymore and make them all beloved. And now you're seeing a shift, at least back on things like sci-fi and all of that, where they're trying to bring you a little bit more avant-garde. But as far as the movie theaters, they're just selling to the masses, and the masses want what they're used to because there's little imagination in people.
Well, wait a second. Let's talk Sharknado.
I laughed. And I hate stuff like that. I think it's ridiculous. But I laughed because it was different. And they did it well enough to make it not believable per se, but at least they tried, and it was funny, and it was meant to be that way.
Wait a second. Are we talking one or two?
I
think two is better than one.
Yeah, I didn't
see
one. Two was fun.
Oh, yeah. And you notice Tara Reid had less Matt Lauer and Al Roker had more lines than Tara Reid did. And Tara Reid was one of the regulars.
Which is probably very good. But it was the number one cable movie of all time. Think about it.
It was pure popcorn. It was pure ridiculousness. And I, you know, it's like the first time you see it, you're looking at all the cameos and going, "That's Kelly Osbourne. She's been it. Robert Hayes. Oh yeah, that's Jared the Subway guy." And he said
right.
in front of the Subway sign, "You gonna eat that?" You know, it's like Perez Hilton. I mean, it was like trying to catch all the cameos.
And what was
you know,
my favorite scene? Pulling
yes.
the arm and the ring out of the shark. Perfect. That would be how I'd want my boyfriend to propose to me.
Oh, no, no. My favorite is Judd Hirsch as the cab driver and says, you know, I'm a part-time actor, and if they ever make a movie, come see me. He says, if they're ever going to make a movie, Ian Ziering looks at him and says, if they're ever going to make a movie, I'm going to play me. Yeah. Okay.
But at least they didn't make themselves too serious. You know, it's not like some of these where you're going, really? They actually paid people to do this crap? They knew they were doing it. They were doing every little bit on purpose, and that's what made it so spectacularly goofy.
Well, you know there's going to be a Sharknado 3 next year.
Oh, yes.
Is there anybody have any ideas where the shark should come again down?
Florida.
Yeah, Miami.
No,
Florida,
I was thinking more UK. You know, I would love to see Charles with a with a buzz, or yeah, you know, with a buzz, or Prince Andrew with a buzz saw or something, and bite off Camilla's head. You know. The House of Commons, right. Now the shark comes down down right on the floor or something. And the viceroy is speaking or something. Eat lunch. And the viceroy is sick. And they get Glenda Jackson out of retirement to play, even though she is she's in the House of Lords, have her cameo or something. That would be cute. That would be very funny, you know. Hey, what do you want? I would love it to be very UK-ish, you know, and get, say, Matt Smith and Tom Baker and some, and they say, "Doctor, is there a doctor in the house?" And Tom Baker and Matt Smith and Colin Baker all go, "Who?"
Oh, jeez.
Hey, she laughs, so she must got the joke. Oh, my God.
I did, and I don't even watch Doctor Who, so I still got it, though. And I've missed out on this phenomenon of Sharknado, but it's actually on Netflix, so I guess I'll have to check it out just to see what you all are talking about.
See two. You can miss one. You can see two.
Yeah. Make some popcorn, get a margarita or five, and it'll be a scream.
Or five.
And when you think that and always you know, it's like the shark is coming, and you hear a person screaming, it's like, get out of the way, you know, they're the next one, yeah, next one to buy it.
they're the next meal
or whatever, or you know, or it's like, we can't find chainsaws, you have to go to New Jersey for them or whatever. I mean, it's like it's the cheesiest, campiest movie, and that's what makes it so wonderful. Most people are like, well, why are you making it so trashy? It's like, it's so much fun, and that's what makes it, in a lot of ways, a great movie. You know, there's a lot of things that you could do, and I'm enjoying it immensely because it is a lot of fun. We are at 45 minutes of the hour. Let me do my homework before people start screaming at me, because then I start to cry and get nasty and people get mad at me. Monday on The Legal Show with Attorney Sarah Steele and myself on the Bennett Pomerantz Network, that is Monday, August 25th, we'll be talking about zoning and the adult club that basically is in the town in Georgia that basically they don't want in their not in my neighborhood kind of thing. Well, and Rachel Thompson and I will not be available on the 27th. And on Friday, I will be out of town, so you guys can miss me on Anything Goes. But I will be returning, and so will Rachel. But we will be returning. I'll be returning on September 6th. And my guest will be Sherry Hayes. And Sherry Hayes has a new book called Crossing the Line. It's a great adult crime drama with adult overtones, and it's really great. And on Any Which Way But Loose, we are next on September 6th, we'll have Leanne Sondheim Murphy, Valerie Douglas, Sherry Hayes, and Naomi Blackburn, and it'll be a great show coming up. And then, of course, the Legal Show on the following Monday. So I've done all my homework. Okay, so
no,
nobody can say
done
I didn't do
I
my homework.
Bennett, can
go
I
ahead.
Ask something? You haven't done all your homework. Folks, you are here on the world. No, you haven't. We're on the World of Ink Network, and we'd love to have callers call in and chat with us. If you're interested, please call at 714-242-5259. There you go.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad she did that, because I forgot that one. But see, I'm so used to doing the homework for the world of it and that one, everybody else. I do it every once in a while. But let me ask you this, okay? We're talking about things like Sharknado and things like that. What are your favorite movies that you can watch yearly or quarterly or whatever? Not just Christmas movies, not just, It's a Wonderful Life, but, I mean, what's your favorites?
I have watched so many over and over and over again, but the one that I love the most is actually Newsies with Christian Bale, like way, way before Batman, where he actually sings and dances. I've watched that since high school. And it's always my favorite go-to movie anytime.
That was last year, right?
In the funk. Well, yeah. Yeah, it was just last year.
Oh, okay. I want to make sure. I didn't want to see the last year.
Now, I was listening to the Broadway soundtrack to Newsies, and I absolutely hate it. It's not like the movie soundtrack, and I'm always very frustrated by that. But if you've never seen it, it's definitely worth a watch. Lots of fun. Lots of little boys dancing around and singing. It's awesome.
Anybody else?
Yeah, mine are weird, though. Mine are actually one Christmas movie, but it's not traditional. Scrooge, the one with Bill Murray. Gotta watch it at least once, twice, five times a year, just because he's fabulous, and the American president.
With Michael Douglas and Annette Bening?
You bet. Yep. Because that actually has values in it, and it makes me think about American and positive fashion. So I think it's a great movie.
Okay. Anybody else?
Sure,
mine
I'll go.
Mine is going to be kind of goofy. Well, they call mine his daughter. And it's so old, and it's just something about it. I'll stop and watch it every single time. It's just funny to me. The Loretta Lynn story, and I'm not even a music person.
With Sissy Spacek, right?
Yeah, that one.
I love that movie.
The one she won the Oscar for, yes.
Yes. So that one's mine.
Candy, you have one?
Yes,
two,
I do.
Six.
It came out in the 80s, and it's called Lady Hawk. It was actually
Rutger Hauer,
my favorite
Leo
movie,
McKern,
Hauer.
Michelle Pfeiffer, and Matthew Broderick.
Yes. I have the CD, and there are times when I just pop it in, and all is well.
I have four of them.
I love that movie.
Not four of Lady Hawk, four movies that I watch over and over, not over and over, but at least once a year. Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Yes, that's the Gene Wilder version, not the Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
Thank you. at December seasonal holiday time, I have to watch either Die Hard 1 or Die Hard 2.
Yeah.
Yippee-ki-yay. Yeah, okay.
Hey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a guy movie.
No, it isn't. Okay. It's a girl movie, too.
It's a girl movie, too. That's one I've watched, like, thousands of times.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but I got to watch it around the holiday season. Now, this one, the third one isn't really a movie. It's a 30-minute or 22-minute cartoon. It's called How the Grinch Stole Christmas, the Boris Karloff version, not the Walter Matthau version, the Boris Karloff version. I got to watch that at least between Thanksgiving and January 6th, usually before Christmas, but that's beside the point. And the fourth one, and people laugh at me when I say it because they think I'm being totally weird and totally strange, I got to watch Jerry Lewis in The Nutty Professor. Not the Eddie Murphy version, but the Jerry Lewis version. Miss Purdy, I'm dating myself now. Oh, my God. And once in a blue moon, I'll sneak in Blazing Saddles.
Oh, yes.
That was just on the other night, matter of fact.
No.
So
I have to watch it uncut with the farting scene. I can't not because when you're watching it on AMC or something else, they put music underneath the farting scene. I'm like, no, don't mess up my movie. And when they hit the toll booth, they say, go get out of dimes. And it's like, yeah, toll booth, middle of nowhere. Yeah, oh, yeah. It's got to be the R-rated version and not the one that's cleaned up for AMC or Network. I mean, no. I got to watch the dirty version. Yeah, the dirty bird, I got to watch it the way it came out. That's just me. Once in a blue moon, I sneak that in the lineup so that way I can do it at least once every 2 years. I watch that one because, yeah.
Do you remember that one movie with Gene Wilder, and I forget the other guy, but they were in a haunted house, and they were like at the end of the movie, they pulled away in a hearse, and the dead body in the back lifts up, and they start screaming.
Is that the Young Frankenstein?
No.
I don't know what it's called.
I thought it was Young Frankenstein, wasn't it?
The other guy was in Mama's Family with him.
Harvey Korman was in it.
Yes. No, not Harvey Korman.
Yeah, and it was the one with Gilda Radner, a haunted house.
Yes.
Or haunted story, yeah.
Something like that. It was so funny.
Because Gene Wilder has done so many. I loved him in The Frisco Kid with Harrison Ford. And, it's like that one is one of my Gene Wilder favorite movies. I mean, I like Blazing Saddles, but Gene Wilder is the Frisco, where he plays the rabbi. He says, I'll take San Francisco. You take the rest of the country. You know, okay, let me get, thank you, Donatella. I have a fan, her lovely, she listens to almost every show I do. I love her. She's great. Okay? She asked this one. This is her question. Don't, if you want to blame somebody, blame her. Okay? What's the best thing that came out of your writing career? That's not my question. I'm not the guilty party.
Do you want the clean version or the
go for it, my dear. Go. Dirt. Smart. Okay.
Well, the clean version would be all the fabulous people I have met along the way who have helped make me, ha, 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 said tongue-in-cheek. No, seriously, all the people I've met have been, it's been an interesting ride, and it's been wonderful to go to conferences and the different, talking to folks online, readers and reviewers and things that, you know, just make it worth your while no matter what you're writing or what you do. And the respect of knowing that I can do and enjoying that, and also learning about the, quite frankly, the alternative lifestyles such as DS and DD and that kind of thing, and having respect for that.
Go ahead. Anybody else?
Well, I have to say that I'm actually fairly new to it because I've only been published for about 2 or 3 years now. So I'm still learning the ropes, but I think that one of the best things I like about it is knowing that I have touched some people, like even if it's just a handful of people at this point, and that they love some of what I'm writing. Like, they may not love everything I write, but the last book for In Chains, I have made people upset at me at different points in that book. I mean, having an emotional reaction from your reader is so amazing. Like, you don't think it's going to happen, but when it does, it's like that totally makes it worth it. So I think just being able to connect with people at this point and grow and to be able to keep doing it and challenge myself to do something different each time, that's the best thing I have so far.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think it, you being an author is amazing. I've loved your stuff, sweetie. You've done great. By the way, that's Alyssa Day. You should look her up, and if you don't, you should. Candy, would you like to chime in?
Sure. I would say the best part about being an author is jumping genres. I've been doing this for a while now, and one of my favorites that I'm doing, that I'm touching people with, are my nonfiction books, as you know very well, Bennett.
Hey, there's one I won't read, but you know.
No, I'm talking about the one about my mother.
Oh, yes, that one I have read, and I think it's beautiful. Would you like to tell them a little more about it? Because I want them to know, too. That is a book I think they should read.
Yeah, I wrote, I'm like at a loss for the title because I have all these other titles.
Yeah, and ask me. I don't keep these things handy. No.
Oh, come on, Bennett. Sure you do. Yeah, it is Angels Go to Heaven, my mother's life and death struggle with leukemia, and my mother passed away when I was 12, and I just felt like I needed to write my story, you know, because I used to read to her when she was in the hospital, and she was in ICU, and children back then, this was in 83, she passed away in 84. They were not allowed to be in the ICU, but they made, you know, allowances for me because, you know, I was her only child that was, you know, living nearby. And it was a really magnificent experience. But in the book, I tell exactly, you know, my heartfelt emotions, very raw, you know, what happened, how I felt every step of the way.
I want. Thank you, Dale. I keep getting, Dale, who is I think it's a she, I'm not sure. But she keeps saying, why don't you tell yours, Bennett? I'm trying to shut up and not tell mine. Okay. So, you know, when you're being pestered, no, Dale, you're not pestering me that much. No, but they want to know mine. And I'm going to, the interesting thing about being a writer, Cassandra touched on here, is meeting a lot of people. I've been in this business for 31 years, and it's been very, very good to me. I've met a lot of very interesting people, from Ray Bradbury to George Burns and other people. And it's been a great ride, and I'm not planning on the ride stopping anytime soon. But the weirdest thing is you're going in Target and you're buying a microwave. I think Cassandra heard this one already. I'm buying a microwave, and I've got it in my cart, and I'm in T-shirt and jeans. And this woman says, "I know you from the radio." I'm like, "Okay, you're Bennett Pomerantz." I'm like, "Yes." And suddenly it's like, well, what are you doing here? I said, buying a microwave. Don't you have people to do that? No, you want to think of something glib and say, oh, yeah, I gave him the time off. I'm a good boss. But you don't burn your fans, and you say to the woman, thank you very much. Thank you very, very much. Because I find that they, when people come up to you and say, I've read your stuff or whatever, it just makes your day. I had a woman, I just did something, and she comes up to me at the hospital. And I was recently ill, and I was in the hospital. And this woman recognized me from something I wrote in Night Owl magazine last year when I wrote an article about an interview with Santa Claus I did. She says, my kid read that. We thought it was adorable. So, I mean, it's the little things that you get out of this, not just, hey, I met Ray Bradbury or I met this person or that person. It's sometimes the common people that just sort of make your day with this. Does that answer your question, Dale? I'm getting a yes, yes, yes. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Okay. Now let me get, Angela has a question here. She says, this is an old variation of a question. On a bus trip, what famous person would you not want to be stuck sitting next to?
Ooh, Tom Cruise. I would not want to be next to Tom Cruise.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be good.
All of you are saying Tom Cruise, or is it just
me?
Yeah,
it would top my list. I would beat him into a smaller pulp than he is.
No,
yeah.
Mine would be someone that nobody would really even think about because I would not want him preaching to me. It would be Jesse Jackson.
Yeah,
I would not want to be stuck next to that man. I don't even like the sound of his voice.
Yeah, that would do it for me, too.
Yeah, me too.
Well, I will say it as long as the Secret Service doesn't listen to the show, and if they do, I'm sorry. Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want him to – not that I don't think he's a wonderful person, you know, but I really don't want to sit next to him on a trip of bus trip, train trip, or whatever. I really wouldn't want to sit next to the man. Not that I don't like him, I'm not prejudiced, but it's like, no, I don't know why. I just don't want to sit next to him. I don't know. It's just a feeling I get, and I don't. Sometimes when you get candy, sometimes you get these feelings, and you want to sort of like avoid the person. You know what I'm saying, don't you, Candy?
Oh, yes, I do. But you know what? I would have loved to sit next to Michael Jackson and pick his brain.
Okay, a young Michael Jackson or one right before he took the Purple Ball?
Probably young, right around, you know, like in the 80s. I would have loved to. I think he would have been fun-loving.
Hey, Dan,
anybody
can I
else?
Ask a question?
Yeah, ask as many as you want.
Okay, I want to ask because I think this is sometimes important that we forget a lot about our fans, and I'm taking off of your microwave experience. What's been your favorite fan experience you've had?
Are you asking me or anybody?
Well, everybody, but we'll start with you first, Bennett.
Oh, thanks. My favorite one?
Yeah.
I think it's when it happened. Okay, my father was still alive, and my brother was with the Lions Club, and these two women were giving blood, and my brother was part of the blood drive, and my brother was telling it at one of the family gatherings we had. And my brother said, "These little ladies knew you from a Faire de Cour magazine." And it enthralled my nephew and my nieces at that moment that Uncle Bennett was more than just, oh, he's just Uncle Bennett. It was like, oh, they knew him. He's a writer. He's famous, you know. And so it just, at that moment, it was like I became more than just, oh, you're such and such. The other one is my cousin, basically. I love doing this show, but my cousin had had a Ken doll. She still does, and she, Robin Peterman has a Fashionably Down Under on her Kindle. She had Robin's book Fashionably Down Under, and he says, "Well, Robin's a guest on my show." She is Cousin Ben. I said, "Sure." And then she says, I said, "Who else are you reading?" She said, "Well, after I finish this, I'm going to read Dawn Montgomery." I said, "And Dawn is on the same show with me. You're kidding." "No, good." So instant fandom. I become more than just, oh, yeah, he's a relative that writes.
That's nice. I like that.
You know, I have to say, for me, you know, you have your friends and your relatives who will tell you you're amazing, and it won't matter what you write, they'll still tell you that. But when you actually hear from people who've read your book that you don't know, that love what you're doing, that is the best feeling anybody could ever have. Like, I had given away a book from one of my Facebook events, and they went and they reviewed it, and now I'm in, like, their top 10 authors. And to me, I about hit the floor. I'm like, seriously? Because when you're writing, you're not assuming you're going to be this amazing author. You're just doing it because you love writing the
story. Well, wait a second. I'm going to say this. You are an amazing author. I will say this because I'm a critic. I'm allowed to say this. But I think all of you are amazing authors.
Well, I'm not saying I'm not. I'm just saying I'm not doing it to be amazing. I'm doing it because I genuinely love creating my stories. That it's just something that when I was a kid, reading books was my escape. So for me, I wanted to create stories that people can get lost in. And that's always been my goal. And so having people respond and say, "Look, I read this in a night. I couldn't put it down. I can't believe it." I mean, it's great. That I'm so appreciative of. I've got a street team, which I never thought I would have. And they're amazing. Like I said, every day they're telling me I'm awesome. I'm like, okay, thank you. And then, you know, I actually get ideas from them too. Like, what do you want to read about? What kind of characters do you like? You know, so I get ideas so that I can keep the creative juices going too. But it's, so far, it's been an amazing ride, and it's only been a couple of years. So who knows where we'll be in like 10 years.
What about you, Miss Dane?
I have two favorites, and they will forever touch me because these people actually reminded me that sometimes when you're writing, and you might be writing fantasy, but it really touches them in a very personal way. One was at a conference I did in Roanoke, Virginia, that you probably heard this story, Bennett, in which the young lady was in a BDSM kind of class that we were doing, and we were teasing about everything from sex and spanking and whatever, and the panel I was on was amazing, and we were just being silly and goofy and talking about how wonderful it could be, and you didn't have to make it so serious and all these different things. And this very young lady came up to me afterwards, very shy, shook my hand and said that she had been raped and that for her, sex was something that she could never do again until she heard me speak about it, and that she thought that it could be fun for her once again in her life. That's the first one. And the second one is very personal, in which I do a flash fiction series on my blog, and I have a fictional character in a sense that is my Dom, Jean Patrick, and I write a lot of flash pieces around that I turn into books. And because of sometimes what I write, I've had a lot of followers, and one wrote to me saying that she was extremely concerned about where I was heading with John Patrick and that she was fearful I was heading into a place that would hurt me. And I thought, what, you know, six paragraphs of telling me why she was worried about me. I thought, what a fabulous touch that you give, but it also reminds me to be very careful with what I say and how I say it.
Miss Candy, would you like to say something else?
Sure. When my nonfiction book came out about my mother, I actually had a gentleman private message me, and he described his story with dealing with the death of a loved one with leukemia, and he said, "Your story was almost exactly." Not really to a T, it wasn't his mother, it was someone else, just so similar, and I felt like, oh my goodness, there are other people out there that have dealt, with this terrible disease. And then I met this other guy I've known for years. I actually interviewed him a few times on my show, and he is the producer of The Grimps, and it's a cute little cartoon that he's been trying to get out there, on Nickelodeon and all that. And he actually opened up to me, and he goes, I lost my mother to leukemia when I was 12. And I used to get sent him my book, and he says, our lives parallel so much. And it was amazing to hear, from that point of view of, children that have, had to deal with, the death of a parent or an older loved one. And those are the stories that touch me the most.
Sharon, what about you?
Well, a lot of mine are, I like just having people, it reminds a lot of people of their childhood, and it's a lot of things that most everybody can relate to. You've got your sibling rivalry, you've got your just your growing up in general. But I believe that, there's a lot of things that that we live through that this generation and the future generations aren't going to live through. So even if my stories are simple and like growing up, there are things that are in there that, future generations aren't going to see or know about. And I'm, talking about, when you could collect the Pepsi top, Coke bottle tops and spell out the word. Now you have to go to the computer and type in a stupid code, and, it's just ridiculous. It's simple things. You could, we could ride our bikes all over the town all day long and not worry about people, picking you up or, shooting at you and that kind of stuff. It's just a lot more innocent that, in those days, it seems like. And I just think that when people read my book, and they think, it just brings back a lot of memories, and I find myself just sitting around and just talking about stuff or, some of the old movies or whatever from our generation. And I just think that's fun. It's really, really cool. And I've had a few people that I have went to school with, and, I never thought they'd pick up a book or nothing. I didn't even think they knew how to read, but they've come up and they've been one of the first ones to buy the book. And they've read it, and they said, I couldn't put it down. And, I've always had problems reading, but this one was just so, I felt like I was there. And then they've become some of my biggest fans, and that's blown me away. I just think that's really cool when you can, just make someone laugh for a little bit or take their mind off things. I think that's really what it's all about for me.
So, let me ask a question, and I'm going to start with you, Sharon.
Okay.
This is your first book. How did you say, hey, I woke up one morning, I'm going to start being a writer? I mean, what was your opening, your overture to being a writer like this?
Well, I had always wanted to be a writer, but I was never good at English in school. So I just thought that I wasn't good at English, so therefore I couldn't be a writer. Well, now that I'm an adult, a good friend of mine has written a couple books.
Wait. You're saying you're an adult now. I want to make sure I got this right.
Yeah, well, I'm supposed to be. age-wise I am, you know. You know, growing up, a good friend of mine as an adult, she has written a couple of books, Reba Ponder Weiss, and she told me, she says, just get your story out there, and, you know, there's people that can help you with their, you know, whatever, they can fix it. And so that's what I did. And a lot of it was just writing down family memories, but that was kind of boring. And so I said, well, I'm going to keep the true stuff, and then I'm going to take my, you know, take that, and I'm going to change names, and I'm going to fluff it up a good bit and, you know, exaggerate quite a bit. So I would say about half the stuff in the book actually happened, and the other half is totally made up. So, I mean, you know, half true and half not. So I kind of leave it up in the air for the readers to kind of figure out which was which. And so, it became really fun, and I have a good time writing it. I was just cracking myself up as I go along, and it was just fun. So this book is just, this takes you up to about the first, till I was about 11 or 12. And so I'm working on the next one that's going to be my goofy teenage years. And it's just, you know, it's innocent. It's just all in fun. So it's just been a lot of fun doing that and writing.
I've heard part of this I know this because I know the lady. Cassandra, tell them how you got your beginning, other than, of course, your mother sent down pad and paper when you were inside the womb.
Well, are you talking about the 4 years ago or before that?
Well, you once told me, and I'm quoting you, you said that you think your mother sent down a pad and paper and you were writing on the walls.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was writing before I could barely talk. I mean, I was writing poems and things at 5, and I had 16 books that I had written before I was 16. No, none of them were published, thank God, because they really sucked, and they were all like Star Wars. But anyway, it was probably the early fan fiction kind of days, but that's how I started, and it kind of kept on from there, although life intervenes, and you do that, and you stop writing or do an interview. Firstly, and I got to a point and said, if I don't do it now, I'm never going to do it. And so about 4.5 years ago, I did start over again and just sat down and said, I am going to do it. And I tried and tried and did everything I could. And one day on Labor Day, which was 4 years ago, this coming Labor Day, I had an acceptance from Rebel Ink Press. And the rest is So They Speak is history. And Bennett's right. It was Treats in a Plain Brown Wrapper, written literally about my very sexy, gorgeous, dark-skinned UPS man that I so adore. And so he had a book written about him in my little fantasy mind. And then it was one of the first to review and then after subsequently interview me for one of his shows. And so that's kind of the history. And then I went from there.
See, I'm guilty of this. Okay, it's all my fault. I know, so blame me.
Yes, we blame you.
We blame me. Everybody blaming me, right? Candy, would you like to tell them your backstory?
Yeah, mine is very, very different, and as Bennett knows, I've been published now for about 7 years, and my first book was about the psychic realm. I was born with the gift to speak with spirits and talk with animals, and I still do it today, but I don't do it professionally anymore. I did. It's very draining. I just actually made a decision earlier this year to just jump out of that realm and back into the writing, just because it's just too much for me, and writing really is my calling. So I definitely don't put paranormal on everything. I probably should, because I know a whole lot about it, but...
If ever I need a resource, I'm going to her.
My story is definitely, and it's funny because that's why I wrote about my mother and all that. Like when she passed away, I saw her and my grandmother, and it's just there are certain people out there that know these things and see and hear and feel, and I'm definitely one of them. I don't advertise it anymore the way I used to. Now I just write, you know, in my nonfiction books, I don't write anything about that. You know, I just write, you know, the hardcore stuff of the actual feelings, you know, about, like, as Bennett does not want to talk about, I wrote about when I had my hysterectomy, and I just recently wrote about
Yeah, that's the one I'm missing. I'm sorry. I love you dearly. I have another friend that wrote on breastfeeding. I'm missing that one, too. I'm sorry.
And that's okay.
It's not my type of book.
Some.
It's not that I don't love you, but I'm not reading about a hysterectomy. Breastfeeding, hysterectomy, I can avoid those books. Thank you. I'm a guy.
That's okay. That's okay. But yeah,
I also don't want to do one on prostate cancer either. But even though I'm a guy, I really don't want to read about prostate cancer. You know, even though I will tell this because she does the legal show. Sarah Steele, I know, is working on a book on breast cancer because she is a breast cancer survivor and she is now pregnant, by the way. Congratulations, Sarah. Yes, I will be Uncle Bennett, I know. When she writes it, I will surely, yes, I promised her the foreword. I will surely, that's one book I will read because I know as a friend and more than that, I will be, I don't want to see how I look in the book. I don't care, but I will read that book. Not because I have to, but I think it's one of those, you want to read it, if you know what I'm saying. Hysterectomies, I can do without. Thank you.
But you know what? I have helped a lot of women with that book. Thank goodness.
Candy, why don't you tell them the title so that way they can look you up. And it is available, by the way, on Amazon, so that way you can go get it. It's not the book I'll read, but, you know, I'm just letting everybody know, you know.
Yeah, it's called Hysterectomy at 29, How It Changed My Life, a Woman's Perspective. I had to have a hysterectomy, and I was very young, but apparently bad female organs run in my family, and I describe in the book, you know, what led up to it, why I had to have it. I've actually had people, you know, try to put me down because, you know, you're a woman, you shouldn't go through this. And it's like, well, if I didn't, I would have bled to death, you know, and I go through the emotional and mental aspect, you know, and that encompasses the whole beginning of the surgery, during, and then after, because so many women, they feel like that they're not whole. You know, well, I'm not a woman anymore. I've lost this. And in my book, I describe how, you know, awesome it is to not have the, you know, those issues anymore, and the freedom, you know, to me. And my husband was there with me the whole time, my children, and I had an awesome doctor. I've had so many people come to me and say, oh, my gosh, my doctor was terrible and this and that. And I'm like, I'm sorry. You know, I feel so bad for women that have to be put down and, you know, told that this is a bad thing, this and that. It's really not, you know. There are literally over 600,000 hysterectomies that are done in the United States alone each year. And from what I've learned, over half of them were needless. So I'm like a huge backer of women, you know, that have this surgery, and I'm there with them 100%. You know, mine I had to have. I had no choice. My aunt had to have hers at 26. She had already had three kids. Had to. You know, we have cancer that runs in my family. I keep telling my daughter, you better have kids before you're 25 because it doesn't look so good for you.
Has she got a good, serious boyfriend yet?
She's 15 and a half, wants to be a police officer, and doesn't much care for boys. Thank God.
Okay. I'm just checking. I'm just making sure.
I could see when she
turns 20, you'll be a grandmother, and you'll be going, oh, my God, I'm a grandmother. Oh, my God. Yeah, okay.
Well, the funny thing is, Bennett, she told me, I had a dream. I was 22, and I went to tell my brother I was pregnant. And I said, yeah, that I had a dream she was. She had a baby at 22. So I said, yeah, you'll probably have a child. And I said, doesn't surprise me. And I said, you'll be the one working and you'll have a stay-at-home, you know, husband. And she looked at me and she goes, yeah, that's what I want.
And I'll be a great Uncle Bennett. We know this. Oh, yeah. I always love being Uncle. I have friends who have got that let me be godparent of their children, and I don't say Godfather Bennett. No, it's Uncle Bennett. Yeah, so it's like I'm Uncle Bennett too many times over. So it's like the real nephew and nieces get confused with like you're Uncle Bennett. Yeah, I'm Uncle Bennett. Yeah. So let me start with let me get the links. Sphinxes and jinxes, other than Tano sending smoke signals, and let me start with the woman I started with last, Cassandra Dane. Would you like to tell them how they can get a hold of you, your new releases, et cetera, et cetera, everything?
Okay. New releases are I have a new Spank Me collection called Spank Me, Perfecting Discipline is the first one. Just came out with Naughty Nights Press a couple days ago. Also, a new Honor and Obey, Her Silence, is out, and I've got several coming up over the next few months, probably 10, 12, 15, I don't know. Some of these are re-releases, so no, I don't write quite that fast, but I was released from a publisher with some of the books. So you can get me at, and my name is spelled odd, so it's CassandraDayne, so it's cassandradayne.wordpress.com. I also have Twitter at Bethany Halley, which is the real name, and Pinterest, you name it, all romance e-books, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. I'm all over the place. And, of course, on Facebook.
Tell them about tomorrow's Edge show. I want to make sure we get that in because that is also another World of Ink Network show, and I wanted to make sure that we get that in so everybody's happy.
Well, I'll do two real fast. One tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, The Edge, is with Margie Church, who is an erotic author of both male-to-male and male-to-female books. She's very well-known with Laura's Cave and several different publishers. Also on the 6th of September is Renee Rose. She specializes in writing spanking books and domestic discipline books, so we'll love having her on, and she'll be on for the first time, and Margie is returning as a guest, so I can't wait to talk to her again.
Let me also mention that this week on the World of Ink, Fran Lewis is coming back. Marsha Casper, say it three times fast, I'll be good, has a good story. It's a good story. And Virginia Grenier, the writing mama, has a show as well this week on the World of Ink Network. Want to make sure. Okay. Sharon, would you like to tell them how they can get a hold of you and whatever?
Sure. I'm on Facebook. It's Sharon Schuler Kreps. That's SharonSchulerKreps. And then that is also my webpage. It's www.SharonSchulerKreps.com. And I'm also on Twitter. It's at Sharon Kreps. And, of course, the book is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and it's in...
Give the name of the book, please.
The Jokers and Dandies. Yes, Jokers and Dandies is about growing up in the South in the 70s, and it is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and places like that. And it's both print-on-demand as well as the Kindle version.
Okay. let me get the lovely Alyssa Day. Would you like to tell them how to get a hold of you and all the rest of these nice things? Hello? Alyssa, are you still with us? Alyssa, are you still with us?
Hello? I'm here.
Yes. Oh, it's okay. You vanished on me.
I did for a second. I'm sorry. You can actually find me on Facebook through author Alyssa Day. And I'm going to spell that because it's spelled differently, too. It's like Melissa, but without the M. And the last name is Day, D-A-Y-E. You just look for author Alyssa Day. You can find me on Amazon and look for the Destin series as well as my urban fantasy, which is The Land of the Shadows.
And that's available on Amazon and Nook and all the rest of them?
Uh-huh. The Land of Shadows is only available on Amazon. It's part of the KDP, but the rest of the series, of the Destin series, is actually Barnes & Noble, Amazon. I believe it's on Smashwords, too, possibly. So it's through World Castle Publishing. That's my publisher. Give a huge shout-out to them. And I'm on Twitter.
Don't shout too loud. I get a headache.
I promise I won't. I'm on Twitter at Dainira. It's D-A-E-N-I-R-A. And my WordPress is also dainira.wordpress.com. And that's all my stuff.
The lovely Candy O'Donnell. Would you like to tell me how, not, well, I know how to find you, but would you like to tell everybody else how to find you? I know how to find you. I go, Candy, please. And you find me anyway.
That's true. That's true. I do. People can find me on Facebook. I have an author page and my main page, which is author Candy O'Donnell. They both are. I also have another page called Promote Your Books. It's a group. If anybody's interested in joining it, definitely look up Promote Your Books. We have over, 1,700 people on that group, and we are growing daily. I am also at authorcandyodonnell.blogspot.com. I have a lot of fun there. I post a lot of good stuff about me, my O'Donnell Publishing, which is my own publishing company, and then, of course, Crushing Hearts and Black Butterfly Publishing. We have some awesome family there. And find me on Twitter at Candy O'Donnell, and follow me, join in to, with my other 18,000 followers. We have a blast.
I want to say something because I know I just see her in the chat room, and I want to say, hi, Lindsay Kendall.
Yeah, I gave her the link before the show.
I just didn't want to think that I forgot her or anything. So, hi, Lindsay Kendall. I said hello.
I wanted to mention really, really quick, Lindsay Kendall just sent me the cover for Nightcrawler. I got to tell you, it is absolutely amazing, Bennett. And I have got to, when I copy it, I'm going to send you exactly what it looks like. It is, wow, mind-blowing.
Oh, she's fabulous. She is fantastic. Oh, she did over the
Lindsay
land of the
Kendall
shadows.
I'm not saying it to swell her head, but she is a force with covers. Oh, my God, she is that good. I love her dearly. But don't say to Lindsay, don't get swelled head. She's blushing. Oh, my God, I'm sorry, Lindsay. Please don't. I didn't do it. It's not my fault. Okay. You guys can always get me a hold of me during any of the radio shows I usually have, other than next week, usually the legal show on Monday, Let's Talk with Rachel Thompson and myself on Wednesday, and Anything Goes on Friday, and every other week, Any Which Way But Loose, and it's so much fun to talk to you guys. I love the emails, and if we haven't said it, thank you. You guys, the audience is what makes this show, because a lot of you send me emails, send nice things about it, and I'm so glad, because it makes what I do and what we do a lot of fun, and I'm grateful. I write for Night Owl Magazine, and of course the new column is coming up. We're talking about Hachette Publishing and their and Amazon and Disney and Amazon. So it'll be an interesting thing coming up. It'll be really nice. And I have to say, because I know Cassandra does the same thing, I need to thank Marcia Casper Cook and Virginia Grenier from the World of Ink, who are very, very special ladies who give me the opportunity to do this show twice a month, and I have so much fun doing it. So if I haven't said thank you to them, thank you, ladies, for a lovely evening. We have to do this again sometime. We really do. I've had a blast. I don't know about you guys, but I've had a blast. Please stay healthy. We'll be hopefully talking. Marcia says I'm welcome. Okay, thank you, Marcia.
Hello, Marcia.
Hi, we're all saying hi, Marcia. Hi, Marcia. Okay, good night. Fly right. Everybody be well and be safe. Thank you, ladies, for a lovely evening. Let's all do it again soon. Good night.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.